The world's population doubled in the last 50 years, while the displaced population increased by more than 30 times from 2.5 million in 1970 to 18 million in 1992, and now it's at 82.4 million. In response to the increase in refugee population and border arrivals, successive Australian governments came up with measures such as indefinite detention, indefinite mandatory detention, temporary visas, offshore processing centers. They have spent billions of dollars to discourage anyone from getting on boats to come to this country. Along the way, politicians from both major political parties have made menacing statements about who refugees are and how they can come to this, come to Australia, use them to promote racism and nationalism, divide and distract working people, and undermine working conditions. If you are a rich person with over $1 million to invest, you can buy Australian citizenship. But if you're fleeing war and political violence we created or support, you're locked up for many years without any charge under similar conditions you fled from. When you eventually get out, when you eventually get freed from the detention centres, you're denied even the basic rights. Globally, what we're witnessing now is Australia's refugee laws are inspiring the far right and being used as a model to manage borders. The UK Border Force is currently being trained to implement Australia's Stop the Boats policy. Under the Nationality and Borders Bill, officers would get the power to intervene at sea to turn migrant boats away from the UK and back into international waters. Under the proposed laws, people found to be genuine refugees will only get to stay temporarily in the country. This conversation is happening at a time when hundreds of thousands of refugees are being created and fleeing Afghanistan. As video footage of Afghan refugees in an attempt to escape Taliban clinging to the outside of a US Air Force plane and fall to their death mid-air showed around the world, French leader Emmanuel Macron made the following comments. We must anticipate and protect ourselves against significant irregular migratory flows that would endanger the migrants and risk encouraging trafficking of all kinds. Meanwhile, Greece has built a 40-kilometer wall and Turkey has completed a 7-kilometer wall and dug up 130 kilometers of trenches to stop refugees from entering its borders. The Biden administration in the US hasn't reversed anti-refugee policies of the Trump administration either. In August this year, 178 groups came together and called on the Biden administration to uphold US refugee law and treaty obligations. They called on Biden to restart processing asylum applications along the border, end policies that block people from seeking asylum, stop the expedited removal and immigration detention, and allow refugees to seek proper legal representation. And Joe Biden has so far refused to do this. Comrades, in today's talk, I'll talk about how these capitalist countries and the capitalist system creates refugees, benefits from their misery, and how the ruling political parties and capitalist institutions globally don't have a solution to the crisis. And finally, how a change is possible only through fighting for a socialist society that worker and that the workers have the power to be the agents of change. So I'll first talk about the borders and nation states. I'll try my best to define borders and nation state. Socialists since the days of Marx and Engels have been debating the question about borders and movement of people, and have repeatedly called for workers to stand in solidarity with their brothers and sisters from other nations. 114 years ago, at the International Socialist Congress in Stuttgart, in 1907, delegates passed a resolution rejecting all border controls and declaring that it's not in the interest of workers to have migrant workers excluded politically or economically, and it is reactionary by nature. Resolution demanded abolition of all restrictions which prevent certain nationalities or races from staying in a country, or which exclude them from the social, political, and economic rights of the natives, or impede them in exercising those rights. In 1913, Lenin also argued that only reactionaries can shut their eyes to the progressive significance of this modern migration of nations. And he observed that migration united workers from all countries. As socialists, we reject nation states and borders. The modern nation state arose out of the development of capitalism. While states existed prior to capitalism, nation states came into existence as it was required for the development of the national market and to deal with political restrictions and the repression of workers, and to manage foreign trade. It brought together less developed parts of the state and linked it with well-developed cities where its people were bound together with the common language, laws, and a common currency. These were necessary conditions for capitalism to prosper. Capitalists used the state to maintain the exploitation of the working class and to protect its interests from rival capitalists in competing states. As capitalist production grows to a point where it requires capturing new markets for expansion, it faces limitations with the borders of other nation states. This contradiction led to the formation of rival imperialist powers, which in turn led to the outbreak of world wars as capitalist states fought over resources and territory. The construction of nation states also created nationalism, an ideology to justify their existence and to try and politically tie workers to their local ruling class rather than workers in other countries. In particular, every time a campaign for war is waged, nationalism is promoted. But as Chris Harman writes, nationalism is not just directly forced on people. The strength of the ideology of nationalism is part of the reflection in people's consciousness of the experience of living in a capitalist world. Just as living under capitalism makes the great mass of people take for granted that commodity production, alienated wage labor, and competition are more common than cooperation, so it makes them take for granted the necessity of the nation states. And nationalist consciousness makes sense so long as they do not challenge the system as a whole. Within it, the individual capitalist is in a very weak situation unless he has a state to enforce his interests on others. The individual worker knows he or she has to belong to a state to be allowed to work and live freely, and to apply for welfare benefits when necessary, end quote. One of the ways the state generates nationalist sentiment is by creating internal and external threats. This is how border control is justified. Borders are often presented as something to do with geographic futures. Coastlines, mountain ranges, rivers. But in reality, They exist and are often reviewed to serve the interest of the ruling class in a nation state or an imperialist power. For example, the borders of the modern Middle East were constructed in 1916 by the major global powers of the time as they carved up the old Ottoman Empire between themselves. In Australia, borders changed when the former Labor government excised the main Australian mainland from its own migration zone. Just like other forms of oppression, such as racism and sexism, border control exists to deny equal rights for migrants. Borders create a differentiated labor force, a population of people extremely vulnerable to exploitation, who are forced to accept lower wages and worse working conditions. The system ensures borders partially fail, remain porous so that some will get through while the majority of people are kept at bay. And the few who get through legal and illegal means will be denied basic rights and are left in a desperate situation where they're willing to work for less and never have the space to protest unfair and unequal treatments, like undocumented migrants from South and Central America working in the United States. Their oppression deters them from uniting with the native working class and fighting for more rights. So borders make life more difficult and exploitation more acute for migrants who manage to cross them, but they also physically stop people fleeing war and persecution from seeking safety. And often it is the countries shutting their borders who are responsible for these wars in the first place. This is the case with Afghanistan. Over the last 40 years, US have systematically intervened in the country, first by arming religious fundamentalists, and then invading in 2001, and now leaving behind a ghastly trail of blood and death. Over the last 20 years, while we've witnessed millions of Afghan people being turned into refugees as a result of West war and terror, major political parties in Australia and globally use Islamophobia to try to convince their local population about why we should be afraid of them and not allow them to seek asylum. In the case of Sri Lanka, the United States war on terror and scaremongering about terrorism was used to undermine the peace process between the Tamils and the Sri Lankan state. They pressured various countries around the world to get behind the Sri Lankan regime and defeat Tamil Tigers militarily, in the process allowing the murder of over 100,000 Tamils and forcing tens of thousands of people to flee. In Australia, while refugees were being created by wars that we were part of, Labor and Liberal governments devised a brutal immigration system to stop refugees coming into the country. Today's refugee policies are a continuation of what the Paul Keating and John Howard governments introduced back in the 90s. During the Howard era, they started their term with attacks on unions and then followed by attacks on refugees, where some sections of the working class fell for lies told by the right-wing propaganda machine and accepted racist answers to deteriorating working conditions. Some accepted policies and legislation that shifted the blame on refugees and migrants. The end result was that the Howard government had the confidence to introduce legislations to launch an all-out attack on working people in 2005. Lack of organizing around the refugee issue by organizations representing the working people, particularly the union movement, who, rather than fighting for working class unity, called working people to fight for change by electing the Labor government, meant that capitalist governments have continued to use the refugee issue to try and keep working people divided, weaken solidarity, and carry out further attacks. Restrictions on migration and attacks on refugees means that capitalists can choose who come into this country. As John Howard famously said during the 2001 Tampa election, the ruling class want to decide who and under what circumstances people can come into this country. In practice, what that means is allowing a select group of migrants from upper middle class backgrounds who can bring in bring money into the country, or migrant workers with the right skills to suit the current needs of the economy. These decisions are guided by profits, not humanitarianism. They also bring in workers on holiday visas or people who come on tourist visas who overstay to work in farms for peace rates without ever being able to speak up in fear of being caught by authorities. The idea of orderly migration, the idea of so-called orderly migration is about having a pool of workers who are desperate and are prepared to accept low-paying jobs. And eventually, it's about dividing the workers and increasing exploitation. As working people, it's not in our interest to see limitations on the movement of our brothers and sisters from other nations. And it's not in our interest to see refugees locked up in detention centers. These decisions only serve the rich. We don't really need to look that far in history to understand this system. Look at how we have been treated during this pandemic while they maintain the detention regime. Job seeker payments, after being increased, have now been wound back. They try to bring in anti-union laws. Increases to minimum wages were delayed. Public sector workers in New South Wales have had a wage freeze and further weakening of rules around collective bargaining. And in the meantime, majority of the billions of dollars given out to expand the welfare state ended up in the hands of big capitalists. 25 companies in the ASX 300 received JobKeeper despite their executives receiving bonuses worth $24 million and millions more in dividends to shareholders. 200,000 firms received JobKeeper despite their turnover increased. Harvey Norman's Jerry Harvey has repaid just 30% of his $22 million wrongly claimed JobKeeper, despite never being eligible for it in the first place. The response from the Australian Labor Party has been complete silence or endorsement of further attacks on working people, while the coalition governments have been undermining our conditions. It is not migrants or refugees who undermine workers' wages and conditions, but the actions of bosses and politicians. And some people argue that the way to fight for change, for a humane immigration and border system, is to vote in a different political party, like Labour in Australia and the UK, or the Democrats in the US. The reality is, elections haven't brought change. Labour has been as bad as the Liberals in Australia. And like I said earlier, Biden continued to lock kids in cages on the Mexican border. The electoral system has helped the system to shift the blame on political parties rather than the system itself. And as I said earlier, Australia is not alone when it comes to mistreatment of refugees. We have seen major political parties across all imperialist countries wage war on refugees. Attack on refugees have become a constant feature of capitalism as imperialist countries chase profit, which has resulted in numerous wars, and significant increases in the displacement of people. It is a no-brainer that the real solution to the refugee crisis lies in measures that includes providing aid to refugees in transit countries, allowing refugees to settle in countries of their choosing, and ending the imperialist aggression and support to dictatorial regimes that creates refugees in the first place. But none of the political parties will offer us this solution under capitalism. On one hand, they contributed to the huge increase in refugee population through wars. They have also been very slow to provide aid to refugees in the refugee camps. In some cases, they have stopped taking them from transit camps. In the case of Afghanistan, since 2009, more than 100,000 civilians were killed, according to the United Nations Assistant Mission in Afghanistan, and nearly 500,000 were displaced just in 2019. A record 7,423 bombs were dropped on Afghanistan in 2019, up from 7,362 in 2018. More than half the population currently lives in poverty. The Afghans who fled the situation are still waiting in Southeast Asia, where they are denied even the most basic rights. And the governments who have contributed to their situation have abandoned them or categorized them as economic migrants and deny them any chance of a secure future. This is despite Afghanistan now being ruled by Taliban. In 2015, United Nations, the refugee agency, UNHCR, budget for looking after millions of refugees in Southeast Asia was $157 million, while Australia spent over $1 billion detaining less than 1,600 refugees on Manus and Nauru. Rather than pledging to welcome refugees, they work with brutal regimes to stop refugees from fleeing so that it's not a problem that we have to deal with. In 2012, Bob Carr, as foreign minister, the Labour foreign minister, gave millions of dollars to Sri Lankan government to install security cameras so that the Rajapaksa regime could catch anyone trying to flee their persecution. Australia's major political parties do very little to support refugees. Mostly, they add to their torture. It is only when we have seen resistance from refugees locked up in detention centers and those who are stranded in the community and solidarity actions from the community that we have been able to force capitalist states to abandon the most extreme measures. In 2016, when health workers protested against 12-month-old baby Asha being sent back to Nauru, when baby Asha was being sent back to Nauru, Peter Dutton had to give up on his plan, and eventually baby Asha was released into the community. This triggered many more workplace and community actions in solidarity with 267 others who were eventually allowed to stay in the community. Pirianade's family, whose children were separated in an early morning raid and were dragged from their home into detention for two attempted deportation by the government and are back in the community after 3 years in detention. This has been possible because of the mass public campaign. It has been possible because the family and their supporters never quit. But comrades, we can't be satisfied with just overturning the most extreme measures. Hardline refugee policies will continue to exist, like racism, more broadly, sexism, homophobia, and other oppressions, because it benefits the capitalist class and the capitalist system. That means we have to overthrow the whole system in order to ensure everyone gets equal treatment. It's always worth remembering that the election of Kevin Rudd government back in 2007, in which John Howard lost a seat, delivered very little for the working people. Howard's anti-union laws were never reversed in its entirety by the Labour government, and the working conditions continued to deteriorate. We still had to fight for marriage equality. Refugee policies that even Howard found it difficult to implement were introduced successfully by Labour government. It was Kevin Rudd who mandated that no refugee who arrives in Australia by boat will ever be settled in Australia. This shows that politics is crucial. It is important that we build a current of radical socialist politics that understands the agenda of the ruling class and fights consistently against it, rather than trying to find ways to make peace with it. The ruling class always promotes the idea that we should look to Parliament for change. The reality is we can't vote capitalism out of existence. The power bosses hold lies outside of Parliament. And whether the Labour Party promises radical changes, it's always about civilizing capitalism. Anything beyond that will be met with brutal force of the ruling class. So for change to be permanent, we must start by looking at the basic structure of the system, which causes all injustices, and embrace radical politics. Radical change is only possible through revolution. Capitalism was established through revolution from the old feudal order. To abolish capitalism, we also need a revolution, a different one to the previous ones, in which one ruling minority was replaced with another. We need to create a society in which the majority rule, a society in which decisions are made by people who do the work to produce society's wealth and have control over how it is used. Just some final comments. Capitalism depends for its obscene profits on the collective labor of the working people, and they will come up with new ways to extract profit. They will ensure decisions are made by the 1% for the 1%, using parliaments as smokescreens, where once every 3 years, we get the opportunity to elect members of the political class who are only there to be a voice for the ruling class. Whether you elect a migrant or a woman or an Indigenous person, nothing will change until the system is run by the majority in the interest of everyone. That is the only way to ensure climate criminals are not roaming around opening new coal mines. Workers' labor time are not wasted on building casinos. Our Indigenous people are not dying in custody, and people's health is prioritized over profit. Also, we will not have, when the system is run by the majority, for the majority, we will not have people fleeing the fire of imperialist wars. And we will not have those people brave ravages of sea, barbed wires and border patrols, only to end up in the hands of Western governments like Australia, who hand them over to private companies and are locked away in offshore camps indefinitely. We overthrow this system by drawing lessons from the memories of past struggle, by recognizing that it could be achieved only through the collective power of the workers. The 1917 Russian Revolution was possible not only because workers formed workers' councils and organized millions of workers, soldiers, and peasants in their workplaces and in their community. It was possible because they stood in solidarity with oppressed in society. They overcame ideas promoted by the ruling class and united with their brothers and sisters from other nations. We end the mistreatment of refugees. We overcome borders. We take a stand against other evils caused by capitalism through a movement organized on the basis of genuine solidarity between all who are exploited and oppressed. And as Marx said, workers of all countries unite You have nothing to lose but your chains. Thank you, comrades.